Hey, Women of Strength, if you have been with us for a little while, you know how much we believe in having a solid prenatal supplement routine. Needed's Complete Plan has all the things you need in an amazing four-part bundle. This bundle can help you and your baby's optimal micronutrient, microbiome, and protein needs. Get up to 40% off with code VBAC and visit thisisneeded.com, type in code VBAC, again that is VBAC, to get an extra 20% off your first order of a subscription, which is up to 40% off select plans. Want one less decision to make in postpartum? Coterie is like the autopilot button for diapers. They're hypoallergenic, ultra-absorbent, and made without any of the junk. We love Coterie because clean ingredients on your baby's most sensitive parts is super important. Best part? You can text them when you need to size up or delay your next box. Postpartum is wild. Coterie just makes it feel a little lighter. You can use our exclusive code VBAC20, that is VBAC20, at checkout to make postpartum a little easier with an extra 20% off your order.
Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. This is one of your hosts, Julie Frankham. I'm super excited to be with you guys today. We have Anne here with us, and I'm really excited to talk to Anne today. Her story, just reading over all of her notes and things that she submitted on the form, and it all just looks really, really neat. And we're actually going to talk about something I don't think we've talked about in a while, although it may have been because I don't listen to every single podcast now anymore like I used to. But I'm really excited because we're going to talk some about different positions to like labor and push in, just depending on the stage you're at in labor and like what feels best. And I don't know, a whole bunch of other ideas. So I'm really, really excited to touch on that and whatever else comes up throughout her story today. Really fun, healing, and redemptive story coming at you today. But before we get there, I'm going to read a review of the week. And this review says, ICP induction doesn't matter thanks to the VBAC link. And that title makes me really happy. Okay, so the review says, the VBAC link gave me the confidence and knowledge to advocate for myself and for the birth I knew I was capable of. For that, I will always be grateful. Having had ICP with my first pregnancy and delivering vaginally after that 38-week induction, I never imagined the second birth would go so wrong. I didn't prepare for the birth at all. I just rode it out as a passenger to my induction with well-meaning medical professionals steering the ship. I ended up with a spontaneous complete placental abruption that really cost us both our lives. That nearly cost us both our lives. 15 minutes after his little lifeless body was taken out of me, my son's heart spontaneously restarted following all the resuscitation efforts by the medical team. Because of the quickness in which he had to be delivered, I had unusually painful and slow C-section recovery. To add to the trauma of everything else, my husband was away for the military, so I was completely alone, recovering from the trauma of almost dying, my son almost dying, major surgery, an infant who needed me all the time, and while taking care of my two-year-old daughter. Needless to say, the trauma for this was lasting and multi-layered. I told myself that if I ever had another baby, there's nothing that would stop me from delivering vaginally unless it was life or death. I found myself pregnant when my son was barely two and immediately poured myself into research supporting my desires and found the VBAC link. Like so many of us, I became obsessed and listened to every episode of the podcast and read every blog, article, and post online. My doctor was supportive and willing to do a VBAC, and we started the pregnancy with her saying that would be our goal, but was cautious to make any promises because of my last delivery. She was incredibly kind and always willing to discuss it, but she had also been traumatized, and so she was cautious too. Thanks to the VBAC link, I knew to see that trauma in her and still be able to hold my ground and verbalize my desired outcome. I made it through most of the pregnancy fine until the last trimester when the ICP showed back up. I began regular testing, which I was okay with because I knew ICP could be dangerous. I declined a lot of things suggested by my MFM, including a repeat C-section, because the VBAC link had taught me that it was okay to do so. By the 34th week, I had developed signs of preeclampsia, and despite meeting a few of the criteria, I wasn't diagnosed with it. I was still up against the law, and after a few weeks, my doctor seemed less keen to allow me to TOLAC because she knew I would need an early induction. At that time, it seemed like a 36-week delivery was more likely, and she wasn't comfortable inducing me that easy. While I knew I had a right to do so, I decided instead to do research and had learned from the podcast and group And then I presented it to my medical team. After hearing me out, they agreed that baby was safe to stay in at least to 38 weeks. I decided to just shoot it straight with my doctor about where I was. I had heard it so many times on the podcast, trust your body to know what's right. So that's what I told her. I told her I knew that my body could do this and all I wanted was to be able to try. If I tried and it didn't go well, I'd be okay with that as long as I had the opportunity. She told me that through everything, she had grown to trust my judgment. And if I said I could do it, she would help me and try. She would help me try. And she told me that she knew I trusted her enough to listen if she said it was time to call it. We both made compromises so that we were comfortable with the plan. I knew medically we had been fortunate to have survived last time and it weighed on her a lot. So I was willing to meet her halfway. And so she agreed to induce me at 38 weeks. When I went in for my induction, I was firm and on the low slide to start, which felt good, like I was in control of something. I eventually agreed to go up a little more, and my amazing nurse helped me with all the positions and movement. Hey, hey, kind of on trend with where we're going to the podcast today. Even when I got the epidural, very light, thanks to all I had learned, she had me switching and moving. I will never forget the moment when my doctor walked in and said, okay, we're ready to have this baby. I just cried big happy tears while they set up. Before they could finish, I couldn't help the urge to push. And literally 4 minutes later, my VBAC baby was born. Mm-hmm. Having that VBAC healed me in every way, ways I didn't even know I felt I was broken. It's like the trauma melted away as they placed him on my chest. I can't even begin to describe how invaluable the VBAC link was to my success and to my healing. Without everything I learned, who knows where I would be. I don't have nightmares anymore or flashbacks. I can think about my first son's birth with a smile rather than terror. I'm so thankful to you all for helping me find my voice and my confidence to advocate for myself. I'm so thankful for your willingness to facilitate this insanely helpful world of VBAC. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Love, Aubrey. I love that so much. That was kind of a long review, and I love that she shared so much of her story. I love that she did that beautiful dance with her OB. Like, I've said it before and I'm going to say it until the cows come home. Like, when you can have that mutual respect between yourself and your provider, like you trust your provider and your provider trusts you, that is such a beautiful symbiotic relationship that really does lead to great birth outcomes. And I don't mean you're always going to get your V back, but when you trust each other to navigate the space together, that is such a beautiful thing. And it also helps reduce the chances for birth trauma and it increases the satisfaction with your birth experience, which is very, very important.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
All right, let's get to it. I'm super excited to be here with Anne today. Anne is from the Midwest, which, oh my gosh, we are recording in November and I am like literally in a hoodie and fleece and fuzzy socks right now. And I'm just in Utah. I love the Midwest in the spring and in the fall, but in the middle of the freezing cold, I just don't even know if I could do it. Gosh, she's a part-time stay-at-home mom and part-time writer, which, gosh, Anne, I just can't wait to talk to you more about your book. Like another time, because I'm a big fantasy and romance.
Oh yeah.
Book nerd. And so I want to hear more about that, but also, yeah, you live in Wisconsin with your husband,
That's two daughters,
a dog and a cat. And I don't want to share any more and take up any more of your time. I would love for you to take over and share your story with us.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I have listened to this podcast, I mean, probably like so many women hoping to have a VBAC, as soon as I found it, it was like on repeat. I mean, it was like a daily thing. I'd go for a walk and I'd listen to like 3 episodes because it was so empowering. And so I'm honored and I'm excited to be here and share, you know, my empowering story as well. And what a great review to start with as well, because I think there is some similarities in terms of my experience with my OBs as well. And that can be just incredibly empowering. So yeah. I guess I'll start with my first pregnancy. So in 2020, or like right at the start of COVID, I got pregnant with my first baby. And, you know, it was definitely a strange time to be pregnant. A lot of fear, a lot of uncertainty when it came to pregnancy and even childbirth, right? Like having a mask on, just the whole thing was just, I look back and at the time you're just kind of in it and you're going through it. But when I look back, it was a really profound thing to experience being pregnant in 2020.
Big deal. Like just, there's, yeah, so much crazy stuff happening.
Yeah. And so at my 20-week ultrasound, they told me my baby had what was called a velamentous cord insertion. Mm. And I know this has been talked about on the podcast before, so we don't have to talk a lot about it. But for those of you that don't know, this is just when the umbilical cord doesn't attach to the placenta in the normal way. So normally the umbilical cord attaches to the inside of the placenta where it has easy access to those key nutrients that you're sharing with your baby when you're pregnant. But with a velamentous cord, it attaches to the outside. So that means, you know, it's harder for those blood vessels to get those key nutrients. They have to travel a lot farther. And then there's also, you know, you have kind of exposed blood vessels and they're at a higher risk of bleeding, I should say. And so, you know, when we had that ultrasound, I was told it wasn't really a high risk, but something that they wanted to kind of keep an eye on and make sure baby was growing as she should be. So it was suggested that I had some additional monitoring done throughout pregnancy and during birth. And I know, you know, to be honest, I just really didn't know anything at the time. And I was just like, I didn't have any issues with that. And to be honest, having a few extra ultrasounds, I kind of loved it because I got a little glimpse at her. And so I was okay with that. So other than the velamentous cord, I did have a pretty normal pregnancy. No major issues other than just extreme nausea in the first trimester and migraines for about a month after that. So it wouldn't say it was pleasant, but no major like high risks or anything like that. And about 2 weeks before my due date, I started to have what I now know was prodromal labor, but I really didn't understand that that's what it was at the time. But it was miserable. I was having these like 5 to 6 minute long contractions. They were not consistent. You know, they'd be super long. And then, you know, 2 hours later, they'd die down to Braxton Hicks. It was just a really weird thing. And at the time, you know, I don't know why I didn't really look into it. I was really trying to be kind of go with the flow, like whatever happens, happens, you know, which is good in some ways, but I didn't really look into it. And I know now that that can be a sign of baby being in kind of a funky position. And, you know, we knew she wasn't breech, but I was still having these really long contractions and they sucked. But I was just going to like, I'm just going to go with it. After about 5 days of this, they finally became consistent. So we went to the hospital and probably a familiar story for a lot of people. I was crushed because they monitored me for an hour and I was still only at 3 centimeters. So they sent me home. You know, it was too early. I was too early. I was told to be induced, even though I was kind of over it. And I just went home. So it was fine. You know, I had prodromal labor for another 2 days until my water broke at midnight and we went back. I soaked in the tub when we got to the hospital, which I'd highly recommend for laboring in. It was amazing. And, you know, I had told the nurse our story and kind of what I was experiencing. And she's like, well, you know, like, how about some Pitocin? And I was like, yeah, let's speed things up. Why not? So we got that started. And I mean, I think, you know, it's sometimes hard to recall exactly how much time has passed when you think back to being in labor. But I want to say it was maybe like 20, 30 minutes after we got that started, my baby's heart rate started to decelerate. And that was really scary. And that's when the nurse was like, oh my God, your contractions are 6 minutes long. I'm like, yeah, I know. It sucks. That's what I've been saying.
That is so crazy. You poor thing. Like, it was horrible. Hard enough without him being that long.
Yeah. And it was one of those things, you know, when you've never experienced it before, you're just like, you don't know what's normal and what's not. And like, I knew that they were longer, but I was just like, yeah, it's just my body getting ready, whatever. But to hear her kind of react like that, I was like, oh yeah, that's not normal, right? So anyways, you know, baby's heart rate started to decelerate. And she's like, okay, so the first one, she's like, okay, let's get out of the tub. Let's get you in a different position. And that seemed to help. And, you know, she kind of wanted me on all fours. It seemed fine. Went back to the tub, labored pretty normally for a little while, and then heart rate decelerated again. And this time it was one of those, like, heart rate like plummeted. And it was one of those situations where like four more nurses and the OB and my OB and the OBN or the resident came flying into the room, you know, kind of a scary situation. Everybody's like pulling me out of the tub, getting me on the table. They did end up, and I forget what it's called, they did end up putting one of those monitors on her head. Do you remember what that's
called? The FSE, the fetal scalp electrode.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the time, they're just like, we're going to put a monitor on her. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, you know, because her heart rate was dropping. It was just like this really crazy thing. So that happened. And I started, you know, things started to pick up, right? I had the Pitocin. My contractions were starting to come hard and fast. And I would say at about seven centimeters, I think, is when I asked for an epidural. So I got one, but it didn't work properly. So it was a really weird situation. Half of my body was completely numb and the other half was not. Like right down the center. So like the right side of my body was numb and the left side was not. And a really strange feeling, right? Because, you know, you're still feeling all of your contractions. I just was like, this is not ideal. And then the heart rate dropped again. And this is when it was really weird because they're like getting me back out of the tub and back onto the table, but I could not move half of my body. And so I couldn't stay. They wanted me on all fours and I was slumping over. I couldn't stay there. And it was just a really weird thing. And that happened one more time. And at that point, so around 5 a.m., when my OBs were switching shifts, they came in and kind of sat down with me and explained their concerns with her heart rate. And I'll be honest, at this point, you know, I was kind of over it. Like I had like the week of prodromal labor, these long contractions with no real rest. And when they recommended the C-section as an option, I was on board. I wanted her to be here. I was concerned about her health. I was scared. I was exhausted. And I just wanted it to be over, to be completely honest. And I will say that I really didn't feel pressured in it. You know, that was their recommendation. And I felt like I have to give them credit because I really felt like they included me in the decision-making process. And it was at the point where, you know, we looking back, we probably could have tried some other positions or just tried something else. But I just felt like they really weren't pushy and they helped me, you know, talk through the decision. And I look back and I appreciate that. So anyways, because my epidural wasn't working properly, they ended up giving me a spinal, which was fine. You know, that worked, which was good. And my baby girl was born in the morning. She, you know, she was pretty gray and her initial Apgar score was pretty low, but the second one was totally fine. But as they did the C-section, they found out that not only did she have a velamentous cord, but she also had a really long umbilical cord. Mm-hmm. So part of what was happening was that long cord was like bunched up down in my pelvis and she had descended pretty far. And so her head, like the cord was in between my pelvis and her head. So I was having those long contractions. So every time I had one of those long contractions, my body was squeezing that long cord and she wasn't getting the oxygen that she was supposed to be getting. So again, looking back, I'm like, oh man, like, is there anything we could have done to like, you know, not, like get her into a different position, even with her being as descended as she was. But, you know, it's easy to look back and wonder. And at this point, I was just really happy that she was healthy and she was here and I was healthy. And yeah. And, you know, I'm sure the C-section story is familiar to a lot of the gals listening, but I did, I got really sick from the pain meds afterwards. I remember puking while trying to nurse her for the first time. It was just, you know, it wasn't ideal. It was still really beautiful in some ways. And meeting her for the first time was definitely one of the best moments of my life. But I sometimes joke with my husband, I'm like, but it wasn't necessarily the best day of my life. You know, it was, I wouldn't say it was traumatizing, but it wasn't the birth I really had envisioned and planned for.
I can completely relate to that. Like the day I became a mom was like the best day of my life because I got to meet my son, but it was also very hard and fuzzy and confusing and complicated. And it's really hard for those two feelings to exist in the same space. And especially like now he's 11, like he's 11 now. And I look back and I'm just like, yeah, it's like, how do I explain it? I could not pick one word. I couldn't pick one word. It has to be way more than that.
Yeah, I totally, totally understand.
Not all prenatals are created equally, which is why we recommend Needed. Needed's prenatal was formulated by testing thousands of women's nutrient levels to know what was really needed to thrive. The prenatal includes 24, yes, you heard that correctly, 24 vitamins and minerals that both mamas and babies need. Their complete plan also includes omega-3s, pre and probiotics, and last but not least, collagen protein, which we know most women are not meeting their daily collagen needs, so that's pretty awesome that the collagen protein is included in this incredible bundle. Thrive and not just survive with this amazing plan and get it today with code VBAC at thisisneeded.com. Again, that is thisisneeded.com and use code VBAC to get up to 40% off select plans with code VBAC. Let's take a moment to talk about Coterie wipes because they're just as amazing as their diapers. These wipes are made from 100% plant-based fibers and are up to 30% larger than most other brands, making them perfect for even the messiest of situations. They're also hypoallergenic and dermatologist tested, so they're safe for newborns and even eczema-prone skin. One of our team members shared that these wipes have been a game changer, gentle enough for delicate skin, but durable enough to get the job done with fewer wipes. They've even earned the National Eczema Association's Seal of Acceptance. You guys, you can pair these with Coterie diapers for a high-performance diaper duo. And do not forget, you can get 20% off with code VBAC20 of your first order of $40 or more. Add a pack of these incredible wipes to your order to see the difference.
Yeah. And so fast forward to the next year. Well, I did have a experience a miscarriage in between my two girls. And I guess I'd like to say to anybody who has lost a baby or experienced pregnancy loss, you know, I see you. I think we all see you. It's hard to understand if you haven't gone through it, but, you know, you're not alone. And I got pregnant a couple months after that happened. And I think that, you know, one of the hardest parts about miscarriage is that I felt like it took some of the joy away from getting pregnant again. You know, so anxious and so nervous about like losing that baby. You know, it's like you're counting the weeks. You're constantly, you know, checking when you go to the bathroom, right? Like it's really hard to explain to somebody who hasn't experienced it. But I felt like I was really anxious, really nervous about losing that baby and just like the fear that she wouldn't make it. But like, you know, luckily, thankfully she did. And other than that kind of anxiety at the beginning, this pregnancy was pretty similar to my first in that I was, you know, very sick at the beginning, but overall she was healthy, seemed very normal. And, you know, shortly after my first daughter was born, my cousin had actually had a VBAC. So I didn't really know a lot about them at the time. And what's interesting is I remember at my 2-week postpartum appointment after my first birth, my OB had just proactively said, you know, we could absolutely try for a VBAC if you get pregnant again. And like, at that point, I'm like 2 weeks postpartum and I'm like not thinking about that, you know, but he, like, I remember him proactively bringing that up and he's like, it's 100% your choice what you do. And I look back and I'm like, I wasn't in the space necessarily to hear that at the time, but I'm very appreciative of it. So fast forward, sorry, I jumped around a little bit, but my cousin got her VBAC and I also found the VBAC Link podcast. So I started listening multiple times a day. It was amazing. I learned so much and felt like just so empowered listening to these stories, like so many strong women. And I felt so educated, like just, I mean, I did a lot of other things to educate myself as well, but I just feel like this podcast, these stories always have a little something to share. In addition to like, you know, empowering you and sharing positive birth stories, there's always something a little educational about them. And that I really appreciated that. And I think it was really important too, because as I look back, you know, in our culture, there's so much fear around childbirth, you know, in the media, like movies, TV shows, so much of it portrays childbirth as this scary, really violent thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll never forget watching The Walking Dead. And I won't talk about what happens, but there's an episode that is just horrifying. And I think I was probably like 21 or 22 when I saw that episode. And, you know, I hadn't been pregnant before. I hadn't had kids. But like, talk about gruesome and terrifying for like a young woman who has yet to experience any of that.
Oh, my gosh. Right.
Yeah. And I feel like it's a common thing. So I think it's so like, it's just so important for us to share positive birth stories. And that's where this podcast was like life-changing for me. So thank you.
You're welcome.
So also during the second pregnancy I took a labor and delivery prep course, and this was offered by Expecting and Empowered. It wasn't VBAC specific, but I highly recommend it to anyone who is pregnant or considering getting pregnant. It's created by two sisters. One of them is a pelvic floor therapist and the other was a nurse, and she's like a pregnancy postpartum fitness instructor. But it's really cool. One of them has had multiple C-sections and the other has had multiple unmedicated vaginal births. So, awesome. Yeah.
Good perspectives.
Yes, totally, totally different perspectives. Like, just a lot of really great information in there. Anyways, I learned a lot from that as well. And I just felt like so much more prepared for my hopeful VBAC, like, or even just like the laboring and the birthing experience the second time around. And I spent a lot of time preparing my body, like physically for birth, both in keeping it like strong and healthy and working with a Webster certified chiropractor throughout my pregnancy. Like, I just was like, I just want baby's position to be good this time. Like, I don't want those 6-minute contractions.
Yes.
And I think all of those things contributed to my eventual successful unmedicated VBAC that came. But the other aspect that I just want to talk about briefly was I spent a lot of time thinking about like my mental preparation for this hopeful VBAC. You know, thinking about finding peace with the possibility of a second C-section. And this might sound strange for some, but for me, it looked like actually scheduling a repeat. So I was at the same. Yeah, I don't know. It was probably a mental thing. Like I wanted to be so okay with it that I even had it on the calendar.
I love that.
The reason this worked, I think, for me is because of my clinic and my OBs. So I was at the same clinic. It was a private practice and they have 5 OBs. You know, you kind of rotate through them throughout your pregnancy. And then the idea is you get one of those OBs, like one or two of them is going to be on call. So you're going to know who you're with in the delivery room. And I had conversations with all of them. They were all 100% on board with my plans. But again, I had kind of decided to be okay with that repeat. And the OB I scheduled it with, she's amazing. And she even said, as we were talking about it, she's like, you know, hey, if you change your mind the day before, she's like, you change your mind the morning of, and it was like a 7 a.m. C-section. She's like, you change your mind the morning of, like, you just let me know, like, this is your birth and we do what you want to do, which was just like,
that's amazing.
So empowering. Yeah.
I feel like awesome. The more stories I record, like, sorry, I'm sorry to kind of go off on a little bit of a tangent in the middle of your story, but like, we started the VBAC Link in 2018. So it's been 6 years. And when we first started, there was not a lot of stories, even with like quote unquote successful VBAC stories where the OB was like 100% supportive. But now I feel like I'm hearing way more stories of OBs being more on board and more supportive and more willing to be flexible. And I just love that. And I don't know if we're having a big, massive culture shift, or I don't know if we're just attracting the right kind of stories or whatever, but whatever it is, I really love it. I really, really love it. Anyway, sorry, go on. I had to just say that.
No, I completely agree. And you know, who knows, maybe you have OBs listening to the podcast too. You know, I mean, you never know what
something
this is doing.
Changing. I feel and like something's changing and there's still so much work to do, but I love the direction it's going.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I will say, so 2 of the 5 OBs at this clinic were younger too, you know, younger women who had come in, maybe just a couple years older than myself. who were, and I'll just go back and say they were all supportive, but particularly these younger women were just like, heck yeah, like, yeah, let's do this. You know, they were so empowered by it. So it was awesome. So anyways, I had this scheduled C-section, which again, I was kind of like, no, you know, I'm so okay with this, that this might happen. But I had that out. That was, I think, a huge piece of why I was okay with it, was because my OB said, you want to change your mind? Like, and then another one actually said, like, even we're wheeling you to the operator and you operating room and you change your mind, we will pull the plug. Like it does coolest. Not matter. So
that is the coolest.
It was awesome. Yeah. So anyways, as you'll see, that did not happen. But I think it was important for me mentally in preparing and just feeling it with peace at that potential outcome. And I think it just helped me be in a much better, a really healthy mental state before going into labor, which, you know, I think your emotions and your mental state are so connected to your body. So I think it really helped with the outcome that I was able to achieve. So 3 weeks before my due date, I started to have really mild contractions in the morning. I kept thinking about my last experience and that prodromal labor. And I was like, oh man, you know, here we go again. So I just kind of settled in. I took my daughter to my mom's house to hang out for a bit. And, you know, about 3 PM, I called my husband when I was on the way home. And I was like, you know, these are picking up. And like, I want you to know that I'm on the road, I guess. And he's like, okay, that's kind of, that's maybe a sign, you know. By about 5, I called my doctor, and it was my favorite OB that was on call. She was the one who I had the scheduled C-section with that was just like, yeah, we can, you know, we can call this off at any time. She's like, yeah, you know, it's a little early, but you know what? Just trust your body, like go with your gut on this. And if you want to come in, I'll meet you there. Like worst case, we send you home, but like you tell me what you want to do, which again was great. You know, just another sign of kind of the way she does things. So yeah, so that was about 5. And then I started puking and I knew that was like, okay, it's time to go in. And so we got to the hospital about 5:30, and I will never forget telling my husband on the way there, because we were like, they were coming fast and hard at this point. I was nauseous. Like I was like, I just was so certain that this was going to happen. But I remember telling him, I was like, oh, I'm going to be so mad if we get there and I'm only at like 2 centimeters. Lo and behold, we get there and I'm at 2 centimeters.
Oh my gosh, no way.
I was so mad. Well, they, you know, they kept me in triage for an hour, and then my water broke right at 60 minutes. And then after that point, it was fast. So that was like, you know, 6:30. And they did give me some Zofran to help with the nausea and kind of the puking and took me upstairs. And at that point, I was like, I think I want an epidural. Like, this is really intense. I kept thinking about, so in that course that I talked about, the labor and delivery course, the Expecting and Empowered, they talked a lot about different positions to labor in. So I kept holding on to everything they talked about. And so we got up to the room, and, you know, the first thing I'm doing is kind of, I'm standing and leaning over the table and like rocking back and forth. And my husband's doing, I forget what it's called, but the pressure on your like lower back. Yeah, the counter pressure. Yeah. Yep. Which helped a lot. But again, I was like, oh, I think I might want an epidural. I'm not sure. And they're like, okay, we're working on it. You know, we're a little short staffed. So he'll be right up, but he's like, you know, with somebody else. And then I think there was an emergency. So, you know, it's taken him a while to get there. And he gets to my room at maybe like 7:55. So it's like, and not quite an hour and a half later. And things are just fast. And I'll never forget, my OB comes in, and at this point, she's checked on me multiple times, but we didn't do a ton of cervical checks up until this point. But it's like almost 8 p.m. and she asks if she can check as she walks in. And I'm like, yeah, like, let's, you know, take a look and see. And she's like, here's the thing, like, you are almost fully dilated. And she's like, this is totally up to you. He's here, like, we can do this, but you're like, you're almost there. And I kind of waited for a moment to really think in between contractions. And I remember kind of looking at her, and I will never forget, like, she's like sort of whispered in my ear, like, I know you can do this, Anne Marie. And it like gives me chills when I like think about it. I was just like, okay, like, we're here, let's do this. No epidural. We're just going to like, we're going to do it. And I could be imagining things, but I could have sworn that the nurses were like, oh, like, yes, let's go. Like, it was just It was such an awesome moment because everybody in the room was like they're just like, heck yes, we're gonna do this. Like, it was so empowering. It was amazing. So skipped the epidural, had just amazing cheerleaders in the room, and continued working through those contractions. They were getting really intense. And one of the things I did position wise was get onto all fours on the table. And what worked really well for me was, you know, kind of staying up on all fours, breathing through the contractions, and then after that contraction, falling back onto into child's pose. If you do yoga, and if you do yoga, it was just kind of the wildest thing. I felt like I was almost in a yoga studio, right? Because it's such a physical thing when you're in labor, almost like a workout. But being able to kind of alternate between working through the contraction on hands and knees, falling back down into child's pose to really breathe and be at peace and take that break that you're offered, because it is a break. You know, if you can just take advantage of that moment of peace and stillness in your body. And that really, that was just really helpful. And I kept thinking through, that was one of the things I had learned in that course as well. And then I will never forget the sensation that arrived with the urge to push. I mean, you cannot mistake that for anything than what it is. And I never got that right with the first birth because it ended in a C-section about 8 centimeters. Never got that. And it's just such a wild feeling when you're ready to push. I finally felt up until this point, I kind of felt like the contractions were just happening to me. You know, they're really intense. A lot's going on. And you kind of feel, you can, in some ways you feel like you're not in control, right? But then when you get this urge to push, it was just for me, it was pure relief. Yes, I can work with these contractions now. I know exactly what my body is trying to do. And I kept, again, thinking back to those positions. So I knew at this point, they're she's, and I cannot remember the when you measure where, how far they've descended into your pelvis.
Station.
Is negative stations. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's -2, -3. Is that when you're close to being ready to push?
The negative is when you're higher. So +2, +3. Yeah. That's lower.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So anyways, she had descended, she was ready to push, and I was on my hands and knees because that's where it was comfortable to be laboring. And so I just remembered then, you know, oh, well, I'm ready to push. That means that I need to make space in my pelvis. And that means that my knees need to be, my ankles need to be wider than my knees. And so I'm on hands and knees and I just kind of splay my ankles out a little bit more. And it truly was the most, and I certainly am not going to use the word easy, but it was the most natural feeling and position to be in. And, you know, I had about 30 minutes of pushing later and our second daughter was born, and it was so magical. They just guided her down and set her between my legs, and they're like, okay, you can pick her up. And I was just like, oh my God, what just happened? I just had a baby. It's just such a wildly different experience than my first. And, you know, that moment of bringing her up and bringing her right to my chest, I will hold on to that for the rest of my life. She stayed there for about 3 hours, which was just incredible, you know, compared to my C-section, which was, again, I wouldn't say that was traumatizing for me, but it definitely wasn't ideal. And, you know, with my first, they had, you know, they had done all the things. They had cleaned her off. They had wrapped her up, and then they brought her over to say hello to my head behind the curtain, which was really, you know, I was happy to be there for it. But this experience with just bringing your baby to your chest, like exactly where they should be as soon as they're away from you or as soon as you're out of you, right? So it was incredible. I am so grateful and blessed to have been able to experience this labor and an unmedicated birth, because it was something I wasn't sure I really cared that much about, but I really think that it helped make this experience that much more incredible and natural and healthy. And I think, you know, I think my VBAC was probably the most empowering, like, redemptive moment of my life. Like, the birth, it was, I look back and I'm like, this is kind of the birth that I never knew I needed. Because yeah. I didn't think that I had trauma from the first one. But after experiencing this VBAC, it was like, oh my gosh, I'm just so, I'll be so grateful for everyone in the process, especially my OBs, because I think that they really were incredibly supportive and empowering throughout the entire process. So
I love that. I love that so much. Like, I feel like, oh, I don't know. I just want to say again, like, echo, like, when you can find an OB that you can create a relationship of mutual trust and respect, that is really the perfect thing to do. And not just with an OB, with any provider, right? Like, wherever you're birthing, OB, midwife, family doctor, any of those, like, when you can have that relationship, then beautiful things happen. It's almost like sometimes you, like, don't even have to use words to communicate. You just do this, like, I don't know. I don't want to sound all, like, hippie, witchy or whatever, but, like, it's kind of like this beautiful little dance that happens where less words are needed and your knowledge of each other and your trust in each other can kind of guide your journey. And I think it's really beautiful when that happens. I've seen it happen. It's not as rare as it used to be, which I love, but yeah, really, really cool.
You know, when you have that trust and that relationship with your OB or your provider, whomever, when, like, if it comes down to the case of a C-section or a real, like, emergency and a real concern, I think that when you have that trust in place already, I think it can make that decision or that next move a lot easier, right? When you know that they're on your team and they're rooting for you and they're trusting you as much as you're trusting them, it's a lot easier to have faith in that, in those decisions, I think.
Well, yeah, no, I agree. And also, after your birth, you're going to be less likely to look back and be like, oh, what if this, or what did they really mean by that? You're going to have fewer questions and feel more settled about how your birth went, no matter the outcome. And I mean, will there be questions? Sure. Like, sometimes there's going to be, and that's okay. Right. But also, it's good to not have to worry about that and not have to question the trust that you put in your birth team. I think that's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love how you were talking about the different labor positions. I think that I'm trying to put my thoughts into words here. It doesn't always work the way I want it to. I think that birth happens most seamlessly when women are provided a way that they can be in tune with their bodies and listen to them and be supported in those choices. And a lot mm-hmm. of that looks like being able to move freely in mm-hmm. birth. Now, not everyone wants to go unmedicated. You totally can have a VBAC with an epidural. I think we shared so many VBAC with epidural stories and everything mm-hmm. On the podcast. But also, when you have that freedom of movement, then physiologic birth can happen way more seamlessly. So I love that you took a class. Like, now we have a VBAC prep course for doulas. We have we have it for parents. It's great to take with partners. I've heard so many people say, oh my gosh, my partner's like 100% on board now that we took the VBAC link prep course. We have a course for doulas training you how to better support your VBAC clients. But also, you can never have enough information. So if you don't take the VBAC link prep course, we will obviously miss you, but get whatever information you can. Take whatever course you feel pulled towards, because different things hit different with different people, mm-hmm. right? So we have the course, and we talk about this a lot in the course as well, but you can never have enough information. And I feel like the more information you have, the more easily you are able to navigate whatever comes up during your birth. So I love that you focus on that. I love that you focus on that movement. I love, love, love that you emphasized putting or making maximum use of the breaks that you had in between contractions, because I've said that forever. I feel like I tell people this all the time, not to diss on hypnobirthing, because I think hypnobirthing is a great tool. when people can really take advantage of that. But I used to tell my doula clients all the time, I'm like, this is hypnobirthing in 5 minutes or less. You do whatever you can to get through the contraction, scream, yell, swear, breathe deeply if you can, move, grab your partner's hands and squeeze them, whatever you can to get through the contraction. But then between contractions, breathe it out, let it go, ground yourself, and just take those nice long inhales and exhales between to get centered and grounded mm-hmm. so that when the next one comes, you're relaxed and ready to meet it. Mm-hmm. And that is perfectly how you do it. That's how you do unmedicated birth. You just go one contraction at a time and take advantage of the breaks. And now, granted, there is nuance there. And sometimes that doesn't always work depending on how long your breaks are and how long you've mm-hmm. been going at it and things like that. But mm-hmm. I really love that power, listening to your body, taking advantage of the breaks in between, changing positions frequently, just doing what feels good. Like a lot of times people won't even know. Like a lot of times I'll just watch these parents doing that beautiful dance and just trusting their body. And they had no idea how intuitive they were actually being. They were just mm-hmm. doing it. They were just doing it. And yeah. I think that's really cool. Cool. I use the word magical a lot in this episode. It's magical. Birth is magical, you guys.
It is.
I have the best job as a birth photographer. I get to go and show up and capture these people's most powerful and beautiful moments. And I just never get tired of it. I never am not in awe, no matter how the birth unfolds. And I've seen births in so many different ways. And it's just always amazing. It's always empowering. There's always beauty in it, no matter what. And it's just really such a privilege to be able to experience that over and over again.
Absolutely.
All right. And I've enjoyed talking to you so much today. What is one tip that you would give anybody preparing for VBAC?
You know, I think, there's a lot of tips that come to mind, but I think the number one, I think, would be to surround yourself with people and providers who are going to support you, like not just support you, but empower you. Because when you're in labor, I mean, you're in such a vulnerable spot when you're in labor. It's really mm-hmm. difficult to describe other than like it's almost otherworldly, right? Like it's so unique, I think,
yes.
and vulnerable. So surrounding yourself with people who are going to empower you to have the birth that you want, people that you trust. That would be my one tip.
I love that. That is important. You are going to be in a much more vulnerable spot while you're laboring, and who you invite in your birth space is very, very important. So I love that. All right, Anne. Well, thank you so much for being with me today. Do you want to I'm excited for your book release that's coming up. Do you want to? I know it's not birth related, but
a little plug.
Tell people where to find you, because tell people where to find out more about your book or you as an author if people are interested.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for that. Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram or TikTok at AuthorAMK. And my debut novel, which is a high fantasy romanticy, it's called Bones of the Bellators, and it'll be available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon in March 2025. So I'm not sure when this will air, but check it out.
Perfect. Well, this will air after that. So I just followed you, Author AMK, so AMKAY, on mm-hmm. Instagram. I'm super excited. All right. Well, I'm going to watch for that. And yes, thank you for spending time with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor because I love this podcast. Like I said, it was really life-changing for me in that pregnancy. So I appreciate everyone who has shared their stories and appreciate you as well. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.